This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up, Hitman of Hammer Network will join us. We will discuss how to bet the NFL preseason. He is the go-to person for betting the preseason. He's about as successful as anyone there is. Betting the preseason, he studies it full-time. This is like his Super Bowl these 3 weeks, so he's very good at it, and he will explain to us his process and how to bet the preseason. Is by the time you're listening to this, it's either a day away or the day of the Hall of Fame game, Bears versus Texans. Bears now a 1.5 underdog, so Texans laying 1.5. I think news came down on Tuesday that Caleb Williams will not play. And here's the thing, is I'll get to the trade deadline in a minute, but the quarterback is usually a proxy for the rest of the team, where, hey, if the quarterback's going to play, that means the offensive line, the rest of the starters are going to play, because you're not going to put the starting quarterback behind a backup offensive line, and vice versa. If you're going to sit the quarterback, that means you're going to sit the offensive line and sit all your starters. So that's why that line movement took place. I don't have a great feel one way or another. It's usually a low scoring game, but that's obviously built in here at 31.5. It's come down from 33. So it'll be nice to have it back. I'll watch it, but I don't see anything that's, that's completely that mislined or worth a bet. So we'll be fun to have it on TV. The football is usually awful, but it's great to have it back, and I'm excited. So that's the football. We're excited to talk to Hitman very quickly about the preseason and his theory, his strategy for betting it. But got to start with the trade deadline. Now, I know, and it's a lot of smaller moves. It was a ton of trades here. It was hard to keep up with them, and a lot of them up at the deadline. The big one is Flaherty goes from the Tigers to the Dodgers. Flaherty was a really good pitcher for the Cardinals, had a resurgent year this year for the Tigers. The Dodgers just continue to shop. They continue to add player after player after player. They need it with the pitching. So that was the big one. They were the short shot about thereabouts to win the World Series. That number's not going to move. You can only go so low. And they still have plenty of issues at pitching. But hey, if you can get Glasnow and keep him healthy, which he's been back now for a couple starts, and he pitched Tuesday night against the Padres. The game's about to start as I'm recording this. You can talk yourself into Glasnow, then Flaherty, then we'll figure out a third and fourth starter. We'll have vets back, and with our lineup, we'll be in good shape. Regardless of what happens the rest of the regular season, their season starts in October, as we know. That's just always the case with them, and they will have a ton of pressure after all the recent flameouts. So Dodgers get better. That was the big move. Other than that, it's a lot of smaller moves. Orioles get Trevor Rogers. He's a guy 3 years ago. He comes from the Marlins. 3 years ago, he had a breakout season, was an all-star as a 23-year-old. Just hasn't been healthy, hasn't had the command, hasn't had the velocity, haven't seen that version of him. And the Orioles actually gave up a fairly big-time prospect in this kid, Connor Norby, to get him, just figuring, hey, we can get some of that version of Rogers. We're going to have a hell of a pitcher, so I get it from that perspective. But other than that, Mets, I thought, had a nice deadline. They get Blackburn, they get a couple of relievers. Their pitching improved. Blackburn's an underrated pitcher. But to me, the bigger story besides Flaherty, and I know the vibes are good around the Yankees, and they just hit a home run as I'm recording this to take a lead over Philly. They've won three in a row coming into this game. Maybe that game on Saturday night, with being a strike away from losing to the Red Sox and Grisham getting the hit, winning in extras, burying the Red Sox on Sunday, burying Philly on Monday, hitting a million homers. Maybe the tide is turned, and we're going to start to see the April through early June Yankees again. That being said, with all of the holes this team has shown, with all of the flaws they've shown the last 6 weeks, you go into a deadline with all these needs, starting pitching, relief pitching, lineup, you name it. You just throw a dart and you find a hole. To only come away with Mark Leiter Jr., who I like, nice addition, 13 strikeouts per nine innings. They needed a swing and miss arm. They get one. Good move. Jazz Chisholm has been tremendous in a short sample. But to only add those two things in a year where you don't know if you're going to keep Soto, Judge is getting older, Cole's getting older, you haven't been to a World Series in 15 years. Obviously, I haven't won a World Series in 15 years. I thought they'd be a little more aggressive. To me, this lack of aggressiveness is going to come back to bite them in October. And look, they're probably going to get there. I know I've talked about them to miss the playoffs at 17-1, 25-1. The schedule is pretty soft in August. They're starting to show a few more signs, especially with Stanton back, with the addition of Chisholm, where, hey, they'll probably find their way to October here. Whether they win the division or not, who knows? But this lack of aggressiveness, which has been a trademark of them at deadlines during the winter. I mean, the old Yankees, the George Steinbrenner Yankees, where he thinks, hey, I have a chance to win a championship. I have Judge, I have Soto, I have Cole. he would go for it and say, hey, I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to add two players here, a player there, a starting pitcher. He would have gotten Flaherty. He would have gotten a bigger splash, added more to the bullpen. I just thought you should have gotten one more player. I know they did get this reliever, this lefty from the Padres, as they continue to try to replace Wandy Peralta, who they, you know, they've gone through Ferguson. They've gone through other guys. They can't really replicate what Peralta's given them. I thought that this was one move short. Now, again, you could say, hey, you don't know what was being offered. Teams probably wanted too much. Seller's market. They wanted Dominguez, the big time prospect, or they wanted Spencer Jones. I understand all that, but I just think if you were Cashman and you were Hal, you had to come away with a little more than Jazz Chisholm and Mark Leiter Jr., considering all of the deficiencies, starting rotation, bullpen, lineup. That being said, vibe seems to be a little better. Team's playing a little better. Lineup looks a little longer. Once you have Stanton, once you have Chisholm, the bullpen piece does help. Maybe get Schmidt back, but I don't trust Holmes at the end of the game. I don't trust that many of their starters, whether it's Stroman, Cortez, Rodon, even Cole hasn't been good. Heels looking at innings limit. So I thought they could have used one more big time piece. And I worry from a Yankees perspective, if you look back in October and say, hey, should have been more aggressive. We should have gotten one big time, you know, bat arm. We should have done what it took to get, whether it was Flaherty from the Tigers or Scott, the reliever from the Marlins, who went to the Padres. That was another theme. The Padres just continue to be aggressive and, you know, give away. They don't care about any of their prospects. They want to win. They want to win now, which I know can come back to bite you, but I admire the aggressiveness. So just thought the Yankees were a little timid. I thought the Mets had a nice deadline. Dodgers continue to get richer as again, good deadline. It was like getting a bunch of appetizers. We didn't get that big entree except for Flaherty. We didn't get the Crochet. We didn't get the Scooble. The story was more the trades that didn't happen with the guys, the big names, the Snells, the Crochets, the Scoobles, all three left-handed pitchers, coincidentally. Those guys not moving was kind of the story more than, you know, the little marginal pieces here and there that did get traded. But look, those guys, aside from Snell, who's, you know, what, 30, 31, Crochet and Scooble are so good and so young. To me, it didn't make sense to really trade them. I mean, unless you were going to get blown away. I know you're a rebuilding team and you want multiple pieces, but unless you're going to really just get blown away with an offer, you want to be good, even in a rebuild in a couple years, and you figure Crochet and Scooble are good enough to be part of that rebuild. So those guys stay put. And other than that, an eventful deadline, a lot of moves, a lot of quantity, just not a lot of like, hey, this move happened, now I have to bet this team. It was a lot of moves on the margin. So always a fun day. I'll talk a little football with Hitman coming up. Probably spend some time on Friday's pod, really delving into these moves as just the way it broke, where a lot of these moves happened at 6 o'clock Eastern. You know, Eloy Jimenez goes to the Orioles. So moves happened, and you never know. Here's the thing about the deadline. You never know come October which moves are going to matter and which aren't. It's just, there's a lot of randomness to it, where somebody you don't expect to, you know, comes through and gets a big hit, or somebody, you know, a pitcher gets traded that you weren't expecting to have an impact, comes through and ends up having a bigger impact than you expect. There's a lot of randomness, a lot of unpredictability with the deadline, but thought the Yankees did a bad job. I thought they could have been more aggressive. I know they're playing better, but still seems like they're a player too short. It really does. So that's the deadline coming up. We'll talk some NFL, some preseason football. That is next. This is a Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should have bet more podcast. Professional better, the Hitman, he joins us. He was with us, I think, right around the NFL playoffs, but the playoffs are back, or the NFL is back, so he is back. Hitman joins us now. What's up, man? Thanks for coming on. Happy football season. Ready to get going here.
Oh, man. You know, today it really felt like it started, because I actually made my first bet on the NFL preseason today. The lines moved now, so I don't want to pass post anybody and talk about the number I got when no one else could bet it. But we're back. So I'm ready for the grind. The 3 weeks of preseason, probably the hardest 3 weeks that I work the entire year. So I'm ready for it.
For people that don't know, you are as good as anyone when it comes to giving this stuff out and betting this stuff. And when you give it out, it moves. So why don't you just give everyone a brief, I don't know, little tutorial of like what you're looking for, how to bet the preseason. If people are saying, hey, I want to bet this stuff, but where do I look for the info? How do I bet this stuff? What are the edges? How do you come upon these edges?
Yeah. So in my opinion, the most important thing that you can do is be active on Twitter, or any type of social media or any type of news outlet that you can try to stay on top of the news. Like just for example, today there was the news came out that Caleb Williams and the Bears starters weren't going to play in the Hall of Fame game. There were some rumors that they might play, which is what kept Chicago as like a -1.5, -2 point favorite. And that news came out, and you had maybe like a 30-second window or something where you could hit a few sites and get yourself some Houston. But also just staying on top of like some of the beat writers and just trying to see, like trying to anticipate the news as well. Like I had a pretty good feeling that Chicago probably wasn't going to play some guys. I was able to get some good numbers just based off of doing the work, knowing what people to follow, just constantly staying on top of it. So Twitter is definitely the most important thing when it comes to preseason, but especially if you're betting closer to post. Keep the quarterback rotations are very important. If you have a strong opinion on this team as a better second stringer, this team as a better third stringer, that's going to help you. And then also the coaching motivation. I mean, there's a reason that Baltimore always gets bet every single year in the preseason, just monitoring which coaches actually play to win the game and which just don't play, or not that they don't play to win, but like some defenses will play all their guys back, play cover four, play cover two, never blitz. And you see teams that are more aggressive, like the Mike Zimmer Vikings of years past come to mind. They'll blitz the hell out of you in the preseason. These rookie quarterbacks and young offensive lines don't know how to pick up those protections. So those are probably the big three, I'd say, as far as looking to bet on the preseason, what you want to look for and what teams you want to back.
And who are the coaches that don't really care? I know McVay, right? That McVay tree. It's some of the younger generation. So anyone, you know, the O'Connells, the McVays, is that sort of the idea where these younger guys
Yeah, I
don't really
mean, it was always the McVay tree. We're always not playing people. And like Brandon Staley came from the McVay tree, and he never played guys for the Chargers. But there's been some shift on it. Like Matt LaFleur and the Packers, he's from the McVay tree, and he played starters last year. So it's really just doing your homework on finding the individual coaches that care about this and don't care about this. But yeah, like probably the poster child right now for not caring about the preseason for the past half decade has been the Los Angeles Rams.
You mentioned the Hall of Fame game. People are going to want to bet it. It's football's back. It's the only game on, even if it's just a few bucks, just to have something on it. What at current numbers? So what, Bears minus 1.5? I think we're still at what, 32 for the total. What would you recommend at current numbers?
So we're at Bears plus 1.5 now,
Yes.
I think you mean.
Okay, yes.
You know what? It's funny. I was on another podcast yesterday, and I mentioned that I thought Houston was a good teaser from plus 1.5, plus 2 up to 7.5, 8. I have no problem teasing both sides of a game. I mean, I think Chicago right now would be a good teaser leg if you could get them up from plus 1.5 to 7.5. And I would look tell people to look for sites maybe that give open teasers, where an open teaser is you can tease Chicago for the Thursday game. And then you can just leave it open, and you can fill that teaser next week when the other preseason lines are available. Or you could just tease it with a week one regular season game if you don't mind the money being held or the credit being held on your account. There's some good options. I mean, I think Pittsburgh in week one is a decent teaser leg to go with Chicago. And I think that Indianapolis is a decent teaser leg as well in week one. So that's how I would approach this game, if you feel like you need to have some action on it.
And the under's getting hit. We're down to like 31.5. Is that too low to play the under? Would you play over, or just complete stay away?
No, it would be a stay away. You know, it got bet up. It went up to 33.5, 34 earlier in the week. I guess maybe that was some people just thinking that Chicago might play their starters, and that's what got bet up. But like now all the info's out. Like everybody knows Houston's not playing guys. Chicago's not playing guys. I think Houston has the slightly better quarterback rotation right now. So I just think, to be honest, that the numbers are efficient right now in the game. But I think that the teaser would be, as I said, the way that I would look if it needed to.
And you mentioned teaser. A lot of people say, "Oh, it's preseason. You can't tease stuff in preseason." But you would probably agree that the opposite's true, where lower scoring games, lower variance, a lot of the games. I mean, it's hard to beat somebody by 10 plus points when the totals are in the low 30s. So you think teasers in preseason are absolutely fine, right?
Yeah, they're much better. And I know a lot of sites have went to like minus 130, especially a lot of like the domestic books have started charging minus 130, which
Not
I
cool.
hate that.
Not
Yeah, I hate
cool.
that. I mean, you should look to shop for places that are at least charging you minus 120 on teasers. But you know, preseason, even at like the 130 range, I don't have the, you could ask somebody smarter than me, better with math, that could probably give you the break even and tell you for a fact if minus 130 preseason teasers are good. But I would guess that you could do worse. You can make worse bets than even if you are forced to lay minus 130 on them.
Anything week one you bet because we're not that far from week one. Anything at current numbers that you'd still play for week one here?
Minnesota Vikings. If you have, there's some pick'ems out there. Still, I think that they're the far superior team to the New York Giants. But I'm high on the Vikings compared to market this year. I think that it's a really underrated roster, and obviously, like, there's concerns about the quarterback position for the Vikings this year. But Kevin O'Connell's been a little bit of a quarterback whisperer. He got a lot of production out of Josh Dobbs. He got production out of Nick Mullins, where Nick Mullins, of all people, his passing yardage number last year was like 270 in the prop market. So, like, O'Connell, I think that he could get the most out of the quarterback situation. They have a good offensive line, good weapons. I think that the defense can at least be average this year, and Brian Flores did a great job scheming that defense. And I'm below market a little bit on the New York Giants this year. I respect Dable as a coach, the way that he has overachieved with some bad rosters, but it's just another really bad roster right now for the Giants. I think that there's a big tier, a tier difference at least with the Vikings and the Giants. So I like Vikings pick 'em.
Totally agree with that. Wow. Who do you think plays quarterback for the Vikings week one? Do you think it's Darnold like the market seems to expect?
Yeah, I'm really confident Darnold.
Okay.
There would have to be something that McCarthy would have to blow the preseason away, or Darnold would have to get hurt, in my opinion.
When you say you're higher on the Vikings in market, do you play that any other way? Will you play the over wins? Will you take a shot at the division?
I played some 3-1 playoffs on the Vikings. That's the future that I found the most value on. It might, I think it's still out there, maybe one or two places if you shop around. I'd probably go down to like plus 260 on it. I think I made my number on it about plus 230 on it. I think that the Vikings playoffs it had the most value out of everything future related with them.
Do you play a lot of awards? Any awards that interest you or?
Very rarely, I like to play the over-under player stats more than look for the award stuff. I know that even though there is a big hold on it at a lot of places, a lot of people will still find really good value on it. Yeah, it's very minimal award stuff that I do have typically, or just long shots in general. I mean, one play I did make, this is going to sound really square, but I bet Mahomes 6-1 MVP. It's funny. Like, Mahomes has only won one MVP in his career so far. And, like, this is a guy that, I mean, how stunned would you be at the end of his career if he doesn't get hurt? That this guy doesn't have four or five MVPs. We know he's the best player. And the good thing about him only having one MVP is the fact that there's no voter MVP fatigue with him. You know how, like, in the NBA, everyone's like, oh, you could just give it to LeBron every single year, but there was fatigue with the voters. There's really no fatigue right now with Patrick Mahomes in the MVP market, and I mean, everybody knows he's by far the best player in the league. So I didn't hate the Mahomes 6-1-ish prices.
He won it his first. I thought he won it 2 years ago and won his second one, but I totally agree
Did
that, yeah, I still
he?
think that's the same. It's like LeBron or Mike Trout in his prime. Like you could give it to him every single year. So I can't argue with Mahomes at 6-1. You
You know
mentioned
what? That's a mistake I'm on. You're right. You're right about that. But yeah, I mean, still, you know,
still.
maybe if he was coming off like consecutive MVPs, you get a little bit of the
Sure.
fatigue, but especially also coming off a bad year last year under his
Right.
standards, you know, and now they added a lot of weapons in Marquise Brown, Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice. He might not even get suspended this year. We don't know with the legal process right now. So I think that Mahomes in that range was worth a bet.
Any player prop, you mentioned player props, any you like? Because I've noticed they're starting to get a little sharper, like lowering these quarterback totals where, man, as long as these guys stay healthy, they're putting it to a point where it's going to be hard to stay under. The value's always been in the under, but is that changing a little bit for you?
It's changed to the point that years ago, I could just blindly bet it, probably win like 65% of the time on unders. And now it's gotten to the point where I blindly bet it. Maybe I hit 54, 55% would be my rough guess. So it's gotten a lot more difficult. I'm not looking to blindly bet anybody under anymore, but I still tend to look towards unders. Zach Moss and Tony Pollard have been two of my bigger positions that I've taken on some unders. Zach Moss, I think right now you can find him maybe in like the high 700 range on rush yards. Pollard, I think you could find in the mid to high 700s as well. Those are two guys that, again, a lot of things could go against them. They could not be productive. They could lose their – they could not win the starting job versus Tajay Spears or Chase Brown. They could get injured, considering they play the most injury-prone position in the NFL. There's a lot of stuff that could go wrong against those two guys. So that's two plays that I've targeted.
And nothing quarterbacks? You kind of stayed away from some of these quarterbacks. I know last year you had a few. You haven't hit any this year.
Yeah, no. I mean, I had some that I hit, but honestly, they were kind of lower confidence ones. Last year, I was playing a lot of guys that I felt like they could get benched at any point during the season. Like there was Mac Jones I was playing under. I was playing Russell Wilson under, and those guys ultimately did end up getting benched. There's not that many guys out there right now that the numbers are worth. Like even guys that could get benched, like a Daniel Jones or Russell Wilson right now, again, like the numbers are just so low on these guys that I bet a few, but nothing like super strong, to be honest.
Yeah, and the thinking is always, hey, if they get benched, you win. If they get hurt, you win. But hey, if neither of those happens, like if you're betting the under, one of those two better happen. Otherwise, the numbers are just so low.
Exactly. Like Daniel Jones is going to go over 2,600 passing yards or whatever his number is right now.
Yep, no doubt. Who's the worst team in the league? Who do you have as your worst team?
New England.
Okay.
I know some people might think Carolina, but I would say New England. I think that it's been a little under-talked about just what a big downgrade it is to lose Bill Belichick. Like, there's been so much shade and disrespect about Bill Belichick, whether it was that stupid documentary that the Krafts put out or whatever, or just I or people saying that he's lost his fastball. I mean, I thought he did a tremendous job considering his defensive personnel last year with this team. So I think that the coaching downgrade is not being talked about enough. And it's the worst roster in the NFL, in my opinion. My Denver's roster is pretty bad, too. But I respect Sean Payton a hell of a lot more than I respect the current staff in New England.
Last couple. Are you worried about Burrow's health? I saw some beat reporters yesterday saying, hey, the ball wasn't coming off his hand well. I was concerned about the wrist. You get good info. Anything you're hearing would give you concern about Burrow.
I'm not hearing anything. And I wasn't super concerned because – I mean, there's been talk that like Burrow's going to play this preseason, which he never has before, maybe one game or something he plays. So, I mean, if they're going to play him in preseason and everything, like it sounds like they're not that concerned, to be honest with you. So if they're not that concerned about it, typically, I mean, I'm not that concerned. So I actually have bet some Bengals. Like I bet Burrow to lead the league in passing yards. That was at 14-1, I think. I bet him 4,500 plus at plus 550, 6-1. But again, those are upside bets, you know, so I'm not as worried. It's not like I'm laying juice on a guy that could be injured. You know, it's when you're getting those prices, you can get a little bit more, just look at the upside scenario of it. But no, I'm not super concerned with it at the moment.
And last one, team you're most confused on, team you don't have a good feel one way or another, where you're just, for me, it's the Eagles. For man, I get why they're improved and I get why people are high on them, but man, people are awful quick to forgive the second half of last year. Do you have a team like that where you just can't quite get a feel for?
Probably off the top of my head, I'd probably say Cleveland is tough just because. Again, Watson. It's the third year of this question mark with him. And it's just like, I mean, if he could if they could look what they got out of Joe Flacco last year. I mean, this is a quarterback friendly scheme and a roster and everything. Like, if they could get production out of this guy, like to just be close to a top 10 quarterback, like this team is really freaking good. And then there's just the other end of it that, I mean, Watson just might suck. And if he does suck, I mean, at least they do have a very qualified backup quarterback in Jameis Winston. But yeah, Cleveland's been a little bit of a wild card for me. I feel like I'm generally a tiny bit higher on them. I did play them some 6-1 division. Again, just looking towards a high, they're maybe a high variance team with how Watson performs. They have a high ceiling if he can get back to the form that he was at a few years ago. So that's kind of a team, a few question marks. Interested to see how week one, week two looks for them.
Hitman, you're the best man. Appreciate a few minutes. Let's have a good preseason. Let everyone know where they can find your stuff and promote your service here.
All right. You could find me at hitmansports.net. All the details that you need to know are on the site. Please make sure you read it before you consider subscribing, because it's not for everybody, this type of service. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Hitmansports.net. Hey man, appreciate it, man. We'll catch up again during the season. Hopefully, appreciate a few minutes here.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you to the Hitman. We will be back Friday. Rate, review, subscribe, maybe a little more of an in-depth recap of the trade deadline coming Friday. Talk some more baseball, but rate, review, subscribe. See you Friday.